I'm not recording now, am I?
No, no, I'm just done. Dennis Packham, Reel One. Can I start by asking you where you were born and when that was?
I was born in a little village called Rodmersham Green, which is about 11 miles from where we are now, on the 24th of February 1923. I lived with my parents in a farm cottage, really, in the village, quite a delightful village. My parents weren't well off, and I went to the local school in Rodmersham. And yes, I had hobbies, like I played cricket a lot in my younger days.
What did your parents do?
My father was a wood turner to start with in a building firm, but then in the Depression, he got caught up in the Depression. He was out of work, and he was a farm labourer until the war came along, and then, of course, everybody went into munitions of some sort. I had two brothers and one sister, all younger than me. And my mother used to go to work in the hop fields, cherry picking and that sort of thing, to try and help make ends meet. We were a poor family.
What was your home like?
It was only a two-bedroomed, two-up, two-down cottage. Right near the Rodmersham Green, opposite the school. Very convenient for me to go to school. But as the cottages were then, the plumbing wasn't as it is now. I'm going back a long way now, of course. But I enjoyed my boyhood. It was country. I know perhaps people don't agree with it now, but I used to like the fox hunting that used to meet on the green every season, the village cricket. And by and large, I had a happy school life.
What do you remember about the school days?
What do I remember? Well, I remember the head teacher, Mrs. Ash, was very helpful to me because I used to do a lot of drawing and painting in those days, and she encouraged me to do this. I liked mathematics and things like that, but I wasn't particularly good at it. When I became 14, I went to a nautical school called the Mercury, T.S. Mercury in Hamble, in Hampshire, run by C.B. Fry.
What made you decide to go to that school? Was it your decision?
Well, it was, but my parents weren't very... Well, I wasn't very happy about it to start with, but I wanted to go in the Merchant Navy. I wanted to go into a canard line or something like that, and this seemed to be a good start for me. So I got a scholarship for this two-year course and went there in 1937, September 1937, for 2 years. Come home on school holidays, Easter, Christmas, summer.
What was that like? Tell me about your school days.
The school days at the Mercury were harsh. The discipline was harsh. I did overcome it, and I think largely because, again, I played cricket. And C.B. Fry, as you may know, was a great cricketer in his time. I won my cap at the school, and in fact captained the boys' team before I left. So a lot of my recollections are down to cricket, because that was the happiest times of my life. But there were some sad times. I was homesick. As I said, the discipline was very harsh.
What do you mean by that?
Early rising in the morning, 5:30, going for a cold shower, going to morning service before breakfast, having to do things within a time limits, whatever you had to do, even going to the toilet, which sounds a bit odd nowadays, I know, but that was true. It was we were being disciplined to the core, I would say. When the war came along, well, when the war was brewing.
Before we move on to that, can I ask you a bit more about those days?
Those days.
What were you trained to do?
Well, seamanship, gunnery, parade drill, but there were other academic lessons. Half the day was academic, sorry, and the other half was seamanship, gunnery, music, because it was a great school for music. I didn't really learn to play anything, but I practiced on the French horn because it was compulsory. Everybody had to do something in the way of music. So I quite enjoyed it. We did give concerts towards the end of the term for people to come in and see. Yes, there were some good times, but most of the time it was a hard life. There wasn't much leisure time. In the evenings, we assembled in the main hall and were able to write letters home and things like that. But there was also boxing, which I didn't mind because being a small statue, I was always paired up with somebody out of my own size, and I usually did pretty well out of it. But it was the thing about it, the discipline was really brought about by Beatrice Fry, C.B. Fry's wife, who, although C.B. Fry was the sort of proprietor, she was the one that ran it, and she was quite a person.
Do you want to say anything more about her?
Well, I think I understood what she was doing. She was trying to get discipline into boys, but she treated us as though perhaps our upbringing hadn't been all it should have been, and was putting discipline into us. Now, I would contradict that because my upbringing was very good, and I enjoyed my school days and early life. But, yes, I think any boy that went to America would tell you that the harshness came from Beatrice Fry.
What was the living accommodation like?
We all slept on a ship on the River Hamble, which was converted from HMS President and is now in Chatham Dockyard, being restored as the Gannet. It was an old frigate of the last century before. And it was like a houseboat. It was rather an ugly looking thing because it had a roof over it. And we slept in hammocks. The discipline on the ship was harsh by the officer who ran it. Everything was done at the double. Came ashore about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, as I said, for breakfast, or for a cold shower first and then breakfast, and then on to a morning service and lessons. I quite enjoyed the academic lessons. I didn't always enjoy the gunnery lessons because I was trying to manipulate a Lee Enfield rifle, which was nearly as big as me, and it was very difficult. But I think, looking back, it gave me some sort of insight into leadership and did my further careers, not in the Navy, but since the Navy, some good.
Did you have to wear uniform and were there ranks?
Oh, yes, there was ranks and we did wear uniform. And after the first year, I became a section leader, which was in charge of about 12 boys, which was quite a feather in my cap, I suppose. But, yes, we wore Navy uniform, T.S. Mercury on the cap band. Used to get home and I used to travel from Southampton, where you've come from, to my home via London when I was only 14, 15 years old on my own. And I don't know how many people would do that these days, whether it would be safe or not, I don't know. But crossing London by the Underground, etc. And getting home to my little village and probably having to walk from Sittingbourne Station to the village, which was about 2 miles away because there weren't any buses. But yes, looking back, I think I've profited from it all.
Is there anything else you would like to say about that time?
Well, no, except that when the war clouds were looming, instead of my making my first choice to go to the Merchant Navy, I was encouraged to join the Royal Navy because C.B. Fry had some commitment with the Navy people. In fact, Lord Mountbatten came to the establishment while I was there. And so I decided I would join the Navy, and I signed the papers in about August of 1939.
When you were 16?
I was 16.
How much had you been aware of the fact that war had been looming?
Well, it really started, I think, in the year before, didn't it, when Chamberlain went across to meet Adolf Hitler and company, and he came back and told everybody that it was, I think the words were peace in our time, but I think most of us, or most grown-ups then, and I've fed off their sort of attitude and what they thought. I thought the war was coming anyway.
And what did you think about that? What was your attitude to that?
Well, I was quite proud to think I was going to join the Navy. At 16, I don't think you have too many fears in life. And I didn't really know what was going to happen anyway. Then I got my calling up papers in the latter part of August, telling me to present myself to Gosport Barracks near Portsmouth. At 9 o'clock on the Monday morning, September the 4th. Well, as you know, Mr. Chamberlain declared war on Germany at 11 o'clock on Sunday the 3rd of September. So I was actually leaving my home that afternoon to go to London to stay in the Union Jack Club prior to going down to Portsmouth on the day that the war was actually declared.
What was your reaction to the declaration of war?
My reaction was one of excitement, I think. Whereas my parents and my grandparents were upset and thought that it was the wrong thing for me to do, that I'd committed myself. It looked like a war right from the start because the air raid sirens went a few hours, I think an hour after the declaration of war. The barrage balloons were all going up around London. And things were changing, yes. Anyway, I got down to Gosport the next morning and only stayed at HMS St Vincent, the boys' training ship, for about 3 days before we were moved across to Douglas Isle of Man, an establishment called HMS St George, which hitherto had been Cunningham's holiday camp. And I spent the best part, about 1 year there in training. I found the training not as harsh as I had at the Mercury, so it came fairly easy, if I can use that word, to me. I got into an advanced class, did very well at my subjects because I'd had this previous training in Mercury anyway, which had stood me in good stead, and I was called to the commander's office on the day I'm leaving there to tell me that the commander's office, by the way, was called the quarterdeck, but it was a palm court of the previous establishment, and told me that I'd been recommended for candidate for sub-lieutenant. Just before I went, he called me back and asked me what my father did. And I wondered why. It put a little bit of a cloud above my mind because I wondered whether he was thinking, can my father afford to pay the mess bills, which would be incurred later in such a career. So I had misgivings about the whole thing. Anyway, I came back to Chatham, to the barracks.
Before we move on to there, can I just go back and ask you a little bit more about your time at HMS St George?
Yes.
Can you describe the training you received in perhaps a little more detail and perhaps talk about day-to-day life there?
Well, we lived in chalets, which were from the holiday camp, forward to a chalet, and in our different classes. As I said, I was put into an advanced class because of my previous experience or background. Part of the day there, again, was academic, where we marched down to a school quite near to Douglas, either morning or afternoon, to do maths, English, navigation, that sort of subject. And the other part of the day was spent, once again, on gunnery, seamanship, navigation, everything to do with the sea.
You say you were in an advanced class.
Yes.
Were you actually trained for any particular branch of the Navy, or were you going to the seaman branch?
I was going into the seaman branch, but there were two sorts of classes. There was an advanced class and a general, well, I think it was called general class. And because of my background, I said I qualified for the advanced class and got a higher standard of education. I took some examinations while I was there, which stood me in good stead for a further career in the Navy.
Were you given any other options, like to become a telegrapher or in the communications branch?
Well, there were classes specially for telegraphists and signalmen. But no, I don't remember being given any option. Coming from the Mercury, I was put into the Siemens part of it.
Were you organising messes, notwithstanding that you were in chalets?
Yes. Well, we were. I was in 116 class, I think that was. Yeah, it was called 116. We lived in this row of chalets, but we weren't in messes there. We had to go to a dining room for our food and things like that. And there was a huge parade ground built, so the chalets were purely and just for sleeping quarters, really. Again, we had to get up fairly early in the morning to start our morning chores. But having had 2 years at Mercury, I was quite used to it, and it didn't come too hard for me. As some of the lads who'd come from Civvy Street, they did find it so.
Do you remember what sort of uniform you were issued with?
Uniform? It's a normal sailor's uniform of a blue tunic, bell-bottom trousers, collar, silk, lanyard.
Were you issued with a number of different uniforms?
Yes, we had about, I think, two or maybe three. One was best and the others were working. And then we had sort of sports gear where we were shorts and the shirts for various sorts of training. PT, for instance, there was a big gym. Boxing again, which I seem to keep getting caught up with, but... once again, as I said, we were paired off in our sizes. So I wasn't too worried because it was somebody in my own size. It could have been somebody who was a band and weight of Scotland or something like that, before I knew, because they were, you know, from outside. But I quite enjoyed the St George. It was about 1 year, and I got home on 3 lots of leave from there, going across on the ferry. I don't know whether it's because we were boys of that age that we were being hidden away from air raids and things like that, but we certainly didn't get any over there. Yeah, the only thing that looked like war was the people like German and Italian people who had been interned, who were interned in Douglas. But that's about all we saw as far as war was concerned.
Did you have much Bowie free time?
Not in the evenings, only at weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays. We had what they called shore leave, although we were ashore. And I remember the people in Douglas used to lay a special matinee on the cinema for us, which I think cost about four old pennies. And as we went into the cinema, we were given a packet of broken biscuits. So that was quite a treat then, I suppose. Yes, I saw quite a bit of Douglas in those days. It's a holiday place now again. And we had to be back, I think we had to be back by 10 o'clock or maybe before that.
How did you keep in contact with your family during that time?
Writing letters. Eventually it came, not just to letters, I mean farther on it came to these photocopy things. In fact, I've got a copy of one somewhere where the letter was actually photocopied down. I forget what they call them now. Do you know what I mean? They're only tiny little cards with all the letter was condensed down by a photograph and sent on to your parents like that. All the mail was censored, of course. Well, all the way through my career, it was always censored. So you couldn't say things that you ought not to say.
How much were you paid?
Goodness, that's a good question. I think when I first joined HMS St George, it was 5 shillings a week, 5 shillings a week. And when I became a boy first class, I think it went up to 7 shillings and sixpence.
Did you receive all of that money?
No, not really. Some of it was put away. We weren't allowed to smoke, but anyway, I've never smoked, so it didn't worry me. No, we didn't see an awful lot. So those packets of broken biscuits for 4 pence, you know, were a godsend.
You left HMS St George in 1940.
in the August of, or, yes, August of 1940, I left there to come back to Chatham, to an outstation. I didn't actually go into Chatham Barracks. I went to, I think it was a place called Laughing Waters, which was a camp outside, waiting to be drafted to a ship.
And how long were you there for?
I was there for, let me see, about 4 months, 5 months, during which time I did, would you believe, sentry duty at night, but with a Lee Enfield rifle that was bigger than I was, and given 5 rounds of live ammunition, given the password, and it pitch dark when anybody approached, so we had to challenge them. I suppose that was probably one of the most frightening times of my career, out there all alone in the dark with a sentry box and hearing footsteps and asking for the password and hoping it was going to be the right one. But again, they did a certain amount of training in there. They kept us on their toes, physical training and general duties, until the draft of the Suffolk came along.
And when were you drafted to Suffolk?
I joined the Suffolk on February the 9th, 1941. It was in Glasgow at the time, refitting or repairing, because it had been badly damaged off the coast of Norway some months before.
What are your first memories of HMS Suffolk, your first ship?
When I arrived on the jetty, it looked a very, very tall ship. It looked antiquated because it got 3 funnels. And I thought, my goodness, where have they found this one? But it was launched in 1927, so it was quite an old ship then, 1941. I was a little overawed by it, yes. I think we all were. But we were taken aboard with our hammocks and our kit bags and into a boys' mess where we were given food and stuff like this. And my first duties, I was the commander's messenger. So everywhere the commander went, I had a trail behind him, and if he wanted a message to go to the navigating officer or to somebody else, I had to run and give the message and make certain I've got the right words and everything else. It was Commander Porter. He was very kind, really. The discipline then didn't seem as harsh as I'd been used to in the past.
You were a boy seaman at that stage?
I was a boy, yes, a boy seaman, yeah.
Did you work on a watch system, or not at that stage?
Yes. Yes, when my first duties on watch, I was in the Red Watch, and I was on lookout duties.
When did you... you said you were a messenger, first of all. How did it all break down, your
Well, this was during the time that I wasn't on watch. I mean, if we were in harbour, I didn't go on watch at all. The watches weren't kept. So I was doing all my day duties as the commander's messenger at that time, until about 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, when time was your own for food and going to the hammock and everything else. But once we were at sea, during what time I was off watch, I was doing the messenger's duties, but on watch I was on the ADP, which is the air defence platform above the bridge in Suffolk, on lookout duties. I have some photographs over there.
And what sort of watch system did you work?
1 in 3. It was 1 on, 2 off. But, of course, that meant 4 hours, say, the forenoon was 4.5 hours, actually. The afternoon, the first dog watch was off, then the second dog watch was on, and then missed the first watch and the middle watch in the morning, and then back on duty on the morning watch. So, unlike some of the ships coming in on defence watches, and that was every 4 hours on, 4 hours off, the lookouts got 2 watches off, particularly because of the harsh conditions we had to endure in the Arctic weather. And
can you describe those and perhaps explain what clothing, if any, that you had to protect you?
Well, when we left Glasgow to go to Scapa Flow, I mean, first things first, we did a month's working up period, which meant we were based on Scapa Flow, going to see gunnery trials, speed trials and all those sort of things. But eventually we went to a place near Reykjavik called Hvalfjord, where we were based, to do Denmark Strait patrol. And we were with our sister ship, Norfolk, and we were out on patrol for a time and then came in and they went out on patrol. And times were pretty harsh here because the weather was very cold, very wet, very miserable. I became very disillusioned with the Navy at that time because I'd got better pictures of it in the sun and the tropics and things like that. But this rather took the edge off my enthusiasm for the Navy.
Describe what it was like to be out there.
On watch, yes, I had a duffel coat, roll neck sweater and sea boots, stockings. We even had these very thick, long underpants that went right down to your ankles. On watch, we spent 15 minutes on the actual pedestal doing our lookout duties.
How many of you were there?
On watch, each time on the ATP, there were 12 of us. Six on watch, there was three on the starboard side, starboard 1, 2 and 3, three on the port side, P1, 2 and 3. And every 15 minutes, we had to change round and we went into a little shelter, which was cold anyway, while our opposite number took over. So we had to change over every 15 minutes because while on watch, we couldn't take our eyes off the binoculars. We were concentrating the whole of the time. There was no relaxing at all. This was either day or night. It was in the open, so in the snowstorms, we were getting covered and wet. Captain Ennis did try to do something for us by... He arranged a steam pipe all around the area of the ADP, which was really... not so much for us, but to stop the binoculars freezing up. Because we're up quite close to the steam pipe. And it was boring because nothing happened. It was just steaming up and down Denmark Strait, waiting for something to happen, waiting for a blockade runner, waiting for a German ship to try and break into the Atlantic. But nothing ever happened. It just went on and on and was very miserable, very wet and very boring.
Did you have a separate action station?
Yes, I did. My action station was completely the opposite. I was in the bowels of the ship in a shell room, a turret shell room. So if I went to action, I had to go from the bridge, right above the bridge, right to the bottom again.
Can you describe your action station and the magazine itself and
yes.
How many other people worked there?
Well, I was in a showroom, which was next door. The magazine was next to us. A magazine was next to us. There was, I think, about eight of us in this little room, filled up with boxes of shells, 8-inch shells, quite heavy, with a mechanism that they could be picked up by a grab, taken along by a rail to a hoist, and then from the hoist they were sent up to the shell ring. The shell ring was going round, and every so often, if the guns fired and wanted more ammunition, the next shell went up. At the same time, the cordite was being sent up from the magazine next to us. The frightening thing is that once we were in our action station, the hatch was shut down and the clamps were put on, and we were there. There was no escape. It was almost like being in a submarine, I imagine.
And did you have any special clothing for that action station?
Yes, when we went to action stations, we were advised always to have clean underwear on if we could, and boiler suits, and perhaps a jumper. But it wasn't cold there, of course. Well, it was cold, but not in the extreme like it was on the bridge in the weather. It was cold, but sheltered.
What happened if you were at action stations for a long time about food and...
Yes. Well, the chefs were still on duty, and emergency rations were brought down to us in the way of soup. Always had lots of soup, bully beef, ship's biscuits, sometimes chocolate, but pretty iron rations for those times. They were brought down to us while we were at action station. Yes, we got by, but it wasn't like sitting down at the mess and having a hot meal and. Except for the soup, perhaps, in a mug.
Who was in charge of you in the showroom?
In charge of the showroom was a naval seaman called Terry. I remember his name. And he was the senior rating in the showroom. And the rest of us were either then ordinary seamen or boys, etc.
And how did you receive orders?
How do you mean by that?
How did you communicate with other parts of the ship?
And how did the shore room through, through a voice pipe.
Excuse me. Dennis Packham,